This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to Speak Now Pro Wrestling. It is July 19th. We are here to talk about AEW Dynamite, but not just AEW Dynamite, but blood and guts. We saw the Blackpool Combat Club versus the Golden Elite here today. Plus, we got so much more to get into. I cannot wait. But before we get everything going, I'm not alone here. In fact, I'm joined by Righteous Reg. Reg, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, Denise? Very excited to be here. A very impactful, action-packed show of Dynamite here tonight. I think we got a lot to talk about. A lot that I like, some things that I felt okay about. So yeah, I'm ready to get into it. I think. Possibly.
Hey, sorry about that. Am I back? I didn't know that if you disconnect your NordVPN while you're live on a stream, that it's going to stop everything.
Yes. Yeah,
I was just trying to disconnect. Sorry to everybody. That was my fault.
It worked.
Yes, I was like, oh no, what the hell's going on? I just don't want to look like I'm from someplace else right now. Mm-hmm. All right, so Reg, I'm so sorry. I didn't hear what you said, but how are you, man?
I'm very excited to be here. Very happy to talk about the show that AEW had tonight. A lot that happened. A lot to get into. A lot that I liked. A lot that I didn't think was the greatest. But We'll talk about it. We'll get into it.
I feel like I'm going to have some like controversial opinions regarding blood and guts. And so I'm a little bit anxious about it, but I can't wait to get to it because I feel like, I need to bring up some points, bring up some things, because there were some things that I really liked from the blood and guts match. And then there were some other things that occurred in the match where I'm thinking, this doesn't necessarily make too much sense, but I get we're going to go ahead and just roll with it. And so that's kind of how I felt coming out of the blood and guts match. So we will get to all of that and more. But before we do, just a heads up to everybody. If you want to help support this podcast, keep us funding, do you have a controversial opinion on blood and guts? Whatever it is, a hot take, cold take, you name it, go ahead and send in a super chat and we will make sure to read it here on the show. We want to also, I'm curious, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you rate this blood and guts? Let us know in the chat. I'm curious about that from everybody. So let's get started. We got our first super chat here from Doppelganger 399, who says, bet of nails. Ooh. Jesus.
Yes.
Doppelganger, thank you so much for this really great super chat. So let's just get to it, man. Reg, let's just start talking about this blood and guts match. So let's start off with just overall thoughts on the portion of the actual match. Before we get to the finish, before we get to all of that, how did you feel about the actual body of the match and the layout and some of the production differences that they did throughout it?
It felt kind of clunky in parts. It felt like there was a lot going on and maybe not a good way. Like, it's like, okay, there's a lot going on. There's a lot. I need to see what's going on. But like, there was parts of it. It was like, Kota Ibushi is in this match, right? Where the hell is he? I haven't seen him in 5 minutes. And they'll be like, oh, Kota Ibushi did a moonsault over here in 5 minutes. Like, yo, throw him on the camera. What's going on here? And it felt like a whole bunch of moments like that. It was like, there's so much going on that you can't capture it enough. There was certain production shots where they would widen it and they would show the whole thing, and that looked cool, but you can't do that for so long because you want to focus in on that. But, you know, I thought that the plunder was fun. The bed of nails was super fun. The glass was ridiculous. The thumbtacks, all those, the extra table, which is ridiculous. We should get into why they brought tables into this match. But I thought for the most part, it was pretty fine. It was fun.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Let's talk about some of the things that occurred. So first of all, I do want to go ahead and point out that one of the things that I liked was the way that they brought in each and every single member of the BCC and also the Golden Elite, having everybody do the countdown and having them come out and have their own separate entrances. I thought that was a really cool touch to the actual match. And it just made it a little bit more, you know, it just adds to the whole show of it all. Right. And I loved that we started with Claudio and Kenny Omega. Clearly, we know you're going to put your, you know, the guys that can go out there. So I'm not surprised that we had Kenny and Claudio start off this match. And I also really liked that the second, so everybody following Claudio, I think it was the second once John Moxley came out, everybody from the BCC came out with a weapon. I thought that the second that John Moxley came out and all of a sudden he has a screwdriver and he goes after, at this point, Hangman and Kenny, who are already in the actual cage, him going after them with the freaking screwdriver and then giving the fork to Claudio, that was the moment where we started to see, you know, obviously get into the spirit of things with blood and guts. So that was kind of fun to see. Once we saw everybody else come in and we get this moment where we have everybody, where we have Matt Jackson and we have Wheeler Yuta at one point go to the top of the cage and doing the spot where they do the suplexes and then teasing that that one suplex is actually going to cause, you know, one of them to go over off of the cage. Clearly it didn't happen, but we still got that moment. Right. At one point we saw John Moxley biting Kenny Omega. We saw John Moxley bring out a bed of nails, which was just mentioned right now. The second that happened, I'm thinking, holy shit, what's happening?
John Moxley was MVP. Of course, I think that's what we have to start this out by saying with what he added to the match.
I do have a criticism of this though, Reg. Oh, really? I don't mean to cut you off, but my criticism of this though is that Reg was the one. John Moxley was the one that came in and brought in, you know, the blood and guts aspect of this match, right? Mm-hmm. The one thing that I did have an issue with though, and I think this has to do with more so like the production of the actual matchup, is that there were so many moments that were missed. Right. That they would show John Moxley 1 second, right? He had like a little bit of blood. Okay, cool. John Moxley, he's already bleeding, but I'm not really exactly sure when he started bleeding, right? And then we go and we see a bunch of other stuff. And then we come back to John Moxley and the man is like gushing out blood. And I'm like, when did this happen? What did he do? What was the moment that actually caused the, you know, the actual blood to come out? So that was like my one criticism when it came to the John Moxley portion of it all was, yes, he brought the violence, he brought the blood, but when did these, some of these moments actually happen?
Right. Yeah. It felt like there was two really pivotal moments where that happened. There was one for his head where like he was bleeding. They were like, oh, John Moxley's bleeding. And then like 2 minutes later, he was like insanely bleeding. It was coming crazy. And then it happened again with his back. Like he was just all normal. He slammed Kenny on the bed of nails and then they went from one shot and they went back to him. And then his back is covered in blood. And you're like, well, why is his back covered in blood? What the hell happened here? There, it was just maybe too much going on. Honestly, I kind of felt like the cage aspect might have been restraining. I know this whole thing was about having a cage, but you got these five huge personalities, you got all these aspects, all these weapons, everything. The rings don't feel big enough for everything that's going on. So when all these guys are happening, it's like, well, what's happening? Where should I focus my eyes? Where should I focus on what's going on here?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was one of the things that kind of hurt me in watching this portion, especially with just like speaking specifically with John Moxley was, okay, well, when did this happen? One of the things that I did like was when he brought out the glass and then we literally saw like everybody at one point go through the glass. We saw Moxley at one point get it. Yeah. Claudio, Kenny Omega at one point gets suplexed into the actual glass. So I thought that was really cool, obviously to bring in the shattered glass and everything of that. Seeing Kenny Omega get put through the bed of nails, how did you feel?
Ooh, that's when it's like wrestling. There's tricks. There's all this. They learn how to fall. There's all these things that go into learning and matches like this. But getting slammed on a bed of nails, I don't care how you spin it, what you do with it. That's just not normal. That's not something that's like Kenny Omega's not a magician where he like practiced this for years with the top magicians in Las Vegas and the masked guy that exposed everybody on Fox. He hasn't went through all that. He's a professional wrestler. So for him to get slammed on it and then for Moxley to get slammed on it and Kota Ibushi hit him with that standing moonsault, it's like, you guys, we got to like relax. This is crazy. We're doing kink matches here live on television. There's all this going on. There's people getting choked. There's pokey things. There's barbed wire. There's thumbtacks. It's getting real kinky out here. But no, the bed of nails was really a really crazy element to add on to it. And it just like kind of added on to John Moxley's legend of him being like, I will bring anything to this fight to hurt you guys. Like, you're going to have to do something crazy to stop me, because I'll bring a bed of nails. I'll bring glass. I'll bring thumbtacks. I'll bring a sword if they let me.
And you mentioned thumbtacks. There was a moment in this match where we had Matt Jackson at the top and he was making it rain, yeah, making it snow. And he brings out this bag of thumbtacks and he just like starts pouring it in. And obviously it goes through and lands in the ring. And then there's a moment where we see, I believe it was Pac and Claudio end up being the ones that have to take that spot onto the thumbtacks. So that was something that I really enjoyed seeing too. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about Kota Ibushi here for a second, because he was obviously the last man to go in. The BCC did have the advantage. They explained that they won the coin flip, and so they did have the advantage in this blood and guts match, and so that made the final entrance of the Golden Elite being Kota Ibushi. So it was this great big moment. He comes out and it's like, oh shit, Kota Ibushi is here in AEW, let's have this moment. I loved when he went right into it with John Moxley. And that was the point where I saw Moxley like beating us, but I'm like, I don't even know what happened there, but I don't even care, because I loved this interaction with Kota Ibushi and John Moxley. I thought that was really freaking great. But like you mentioned, him putting John Moxley through that bed of nails and then him doing that standing moonsault to Moxley onto the bed of nails. That one, for me, I thought the way that they brought in Kota Ibushi was just really great to give him all of these different moments. And even during the match, there was a portion where the BCC had the Golden Elite locked in all of these different submissions. Yeah. And they had Kota Ibushi be the one to go in and hit all of his strikes on all of the guys to break it up. I thought they did a really phenomenal job of highlighting and giving special moments to Kota Ibushi, considering that he was a major surprise.
Yeah, anytime that he was presented, it looked great. The pop for him coming out, the crowd gave him a big, huge ovation. Him just coming out and kind of taking it in. He looked like a big star. He looked like, well, there's a reason why everybody's going crazy. There's a reason why this moment's so big. There's a reason why he's the last guy coming out here. He was presented as great. The moments that he had with Kenny, them kind of having little hugs or doing their combo moves together, were just awesome. And I think this sets up exactly what you're saying here, sets up a future maybe Kota Ibushi and John Moxley match, which sounds kind of wild, but the way that they were kind of, the way that he came in and Mox was holding Kenny on the bed of nails, holding his hand, and Kota was just like, yo, that's my guy, I'm about to come in here and fight you, and Mox being like, I don't care, and flipping him off, set up a good future singles match that I think that could be the first big match of Kota Ibushi being here in AEW.
I hope so. By the way, usually during these shows is when Tony Khan will send out like an all elite, this person is all elite tweet. Have we gotten one yet?
Have we gotten one?
I don't know if we know. Like, this is the thing. Like, I really hope that, you know, pretty soon we find out whether or not Kota Ibushi is all elite. I feel like it, maybe not. We'll see that tweet from Tony Khan with the all elite graphic.
It's usually the time, though.
No, this is usually the time when he does it, but I don't know. I haven't seen anything just yet. But let's, I guess, have fingers crossed, because then that would mean, you know, all of these matchups and just cool things. But anyways, talking more about these spots that happened in the blood and guts. Another moment that I really liked, and they kind of missed it first with the camera shot, but then they did a replay, and so we got the small window version of this. And this was a really great moment where Pac goes to the top, and he kind of like swings his body and ends up doing a stomp. I believe it was onto Matt Jackson, who was there in between the actual rings, laying on a table. And that was a really, really cool moment.
I think another person, we talked about Kota Ibushi looking great and being presented. The way that Pac was in this match, he looked badass at pretty much every single moment, from coming out to just being in there, being who he is, you know, one of the best, crispest wrestlers there is in the world. And then kind of hitting that spot, paying tribute to, I don't know, I always kind of connect him and Finn Balor's career for some reason. They're together for me, and kind of doing a big Finn Balor spot, which is just insane. And yeah, that's the tables thing. This match is going on, Denise. There's all kinds of crazy. Look at all the things that we named. There's glass. There's a bed of nails. There's thumbtacks. And the crowd out of nowhere starts chanting for tables. But there's already chaos going on. It's like if like Freddy and Jason was going on, they're stabbing all these kids, and someone's like, and then hit them with the car. You're like, well, they're already killing everybody. What do you need the car for? Like, we're already doing this.
It got worse though. But hold on. So they chant for the tables. They get the tables, right? Because wrestling fans, we always want two things. Head and tables. If you don't get the joke, please make sure you get the joke. This is a wrestling podcast, damn it. You gotta get the joke.
It's true, though.
It's true. Am I wrong here? Am I wrong? What does everybody want? What does everybody need? Y'all know what I'm talking about. But anyway, yes. So wrestling fans always want tables. And so they get the tables. And then the Boston crowd.
That's not enough.
They get a little cocky, get a little confident, right? Always wanting more. All of a sudden, they start chanting, "We want fire." And I'm thinking, these guys are freaking chanting that they want fire. And you know what, Reg? I was on board.
I mean, at one point, I'm like, I guess they're going to make this happen. Who's going to bring out the fire to burn somebody? But like, we got to give fans what they want, Denise. I'm all in. Like, everybody cheered. They got the tables probably weren't even going to be in the match, and they like added in these spots. But fire, you guys, like, that's like a controlled thing with like professionals, and everybody takes a little class, a 30-minute class probably, to learn about fire safety and stop, drop, and roll. You can't just go and get fire and set somebody on fire. And what does that mean, Denise? What does "we want fire" mean? They want to set a table on fire? Do they want to set somebody on fire?
I mean, I was assuming, okay, if they want tables and they want fire, well, what do? You get a table, you get a lighter, you know, you do the thing, you light it up. I don't know, but clearly never lit a fire. And then you put somebody through it. Who's brave enough to do it? You know what? John Moxley.
Yeah.
All the makings were there. But Boston was definitely savage for wanting all of this. But so we've talked a lot about, you know, the action portion of it all, right? Mm-hmm. There was a lot of really great stuff, so much that we didn't even talk about because we cannot break down every move that occurred. But there was a lot of really great action in this match.
Definitely.
But let's talk about the story that basically closed out this Blood and Guts match, because we saw some like problems that ended up unfolding between the BCC and PAC.
Yep.
And so PAC basically he's a bastard. He don't give a damn.
He don't care.
He brings out the freaking bolt cutter and he breaks himself free, gets out, and he leaves. And he even slams the door in Claudio's face on his way out. And then we're at this point where it's now 5-on-4. Mm-hmm. And then Don Callis sees that, you know what, the BCC, they don't look like they're doing so well. I'm going to take my client, Konosuke Takeshita, the hell out of this match. So then he takes him away. And then we end up with a 5-on-3 situation. Mm-hmm. This all leads to the actual finish of the match where we see the Golden Elite end up choking out Wheeler Yuta with a freaking chain. And that is the ending of the match. I did not like the ending of the match, Reg.
Why not?
Personally, and I don't know, someone could break down the technicality, the rules, but should PAC leaving not count as some sort of surrender? Does that not count?
That's a pretty good point. I mean, leaving the cage, the match is over. You're saying for your team, I'm done here. That Ayanara feels like a surrender for me. Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. I wasn't really feeling the, hey, I'm just going to leave and get out. And then Don Callis just taking Konosuke Takeshita out. I'm thinking, okay,
same
so
thing.
Now
that's
it's
two people, two surrenders. Right.
So for me, like seeing the Elite defeat them in this manner, it felt very, very flat. It felt like a very flat finish where it was just not, it didn't have the big, oh my God, we just went through this entire journey and here's this moment where I'm going, holy shit, the Elite did it. Instead, I'm thinking, oh, well, the Elite should have won because they were 5-on-3 at this point. If they didn't win, they would have looked silly as fuck if they wouldn't have won. Yeah. So I was just there like, okay, so the Elite wins. Cool. Time to do this post show. It didn't leave me feeling.
Right. Agreed.
It did not leave me feeling like, oh my God, I can't believe this was the moment, blah, blah, blah. I did not have the feeling at the end of this match. So that was a little bit of my troubles with it, is I didn't really like the ending of this story. What did you think?
I liked aspects of it. I think PAC kind of, because PAC doesn't really want friends. We've seen a couple aspects of him being in AEW and having friends with like the Lucha Brothers, but in reality, he just wants to be alone. I think he just kind of took this match because he wanted to get some revenge. And by that point, he was like, I got my revenge. But kind of throughout the whole match, Denise, they were telling the story of him and Claudio kind of having beef. There was one point where they pushed and bumped into each other, and that's kind of led to him getting out of there. So telling that story, potentially, there's a Ring of Honor pay-per-view coming up on Friday. Claudio needs an opponent. Pax beefing, Pax back. He looked great in that match. Maybe this could be leading to that. I don't know. That would be great. The other thing kind of that, though, is I agree with what you said, that it was beyond that. It just felt like, okay, the match is over. It didn't feel like, yeah, the match is over. And kind of Kota Ibushi being involved, Kenny, and all the things that they kind of put him through, it felt like this didn't feel like the end of the feud, which matches like this could kind of signify. But like with him dragging off Takeshita, it kind of took a little bit away from the moment. Like maybe he should have been involved in the finish too. But if they're going to continue to tell stories, which I'm sure they are, it all makes sense.
All righty. So let's get some thoughts in here. We got some controversial opinions. I don't know if you want to call them controversial opinions, but we got them. All right. What did you guys think about this? Let's get some thoughts. All right. So we got so many different comments in here. I'm going to go ahead and start off with the super chats. And this one's from Johnny here, who says, which match do you like better, this one or Anarchy? Oh, from this year, from Double or Nothing. Definitely the Anarchy in the Arena Double or Nothing match.
Yes, I agree. I think that just being able to have more space. It's funny that this cage and having two rings was constricting when they just had one match with the one ring with the Anarchy in the Arena. But yeah, I kind of feel like I like the Anarchy in Arena match better. Bryan Danielson could have been another element that changed this whole thing, Denise, that we don't know. There could have been stuff planned out that kind of cemented the things in there, and he wasn't there. So I don't know.
That is true. I'm glad you bring that up. Okay. Jake Salazar says, still no Goldberg. This is a nasty work. Benoit Richard sends in a super chat saying, please, Denise, your official comment about the new North American champion. This is from the NXT show. I told you all that this was going to happen. Reg, everybody, nobody actually believed me when I said, you know what? I got a gut feeling that Dominic Mysterio is actually going to win the championship. And then he did.
This is right up Denise Salcedo's alley, though. I know she loves the chaos. Like, Dominic's going to come in and win the championship. Great idea. You love it. Disgusting. What the hell's going on here, Denise? What do you mean?
It doesn't matter if it was disgusting. The point is that I was right, and I knew it. That's my official statement. John Deller says, dance off was pure cinema. We'll talk about that in a second. Magnum Wayne says, Ibushi looked a bit rough, and some production was not great, but it was a hell of a violent match. I especially like the ending with Mox saving Yuta. I didn't feel like I had any moment where I thought Kota Ibushi looked rough. I loved everything that involved him in this match.
Yeah, I just think it was just a lot going on. He didn't have a lot of room to just kind of get into his groove and do his thing. But I thought anything that he involved of, he looked pretty good in it.
Jake Salazar says, 11 out of 10, blood and guts match. Just brutal. He loved it. Mr. Acosta says, hot take. The match was okay. The end I didn't like. Why would Pac bounce? Because Kenny moved out of the way? Also felt like a lot of standing, waiting for spots. I do agree with what, I mean, we obviously talked about the ending. So I do agree that I wasn't totally crazy about it. I wasn't totally crazy about Pac just like leaving and that not, you know, impacting the match. Well, clearly it impacted the match because, you know, you're out one guy, but I don't know. I just kind of felt like we were blurring the lines at that point of what this means in total of like a surrender situation, right?
Yeah. I agree. And that's like kind of how it is. A great point that Mr. Acosta is making here is that in these kind of matches, like Royal Rumble included, any match that has like these giant, a lot of people involved, it's about the moment. So the moments in between could always feel like some of these matches are just a lot of standing around and punching or standing in the corner and getting your things off and not as action packed as like an Ospreay and Omega, like match back to back to back, back spots like this. So that can get kind of lost in this, and they have a lot of time. This was based on time, so there's going to be time that some people are just off to the side, and so I can understand why he has that.
Right. There's just so many elements involved, right? Like, there's all these portions that you miss, clearly, because there's 10 guys in the ring, right? Mm-hmm. There's 10 guys in the ring, so there's going to be things you're going to miss, and then there's things where all of a sudden you catch this guy doing nothing in the corner because, because you were waiting for this part, and so I think all of that all of that falls in line with basically, you know, whoever is in the back producing this match is basically supposed to be letting the person, the person at the switchboard be like, okay, well, this is going to happen next. Let's make sure we got a shot of this. Let's make sure we got a shot of that. And so I do think that, yeah, there were just some moments, but it sucks because it did take away a lot for me from the match to have a lot of those moments missed. But I don't want to say that that ruined Blood and Guts for me at all, because there was still a lot of really great stuff in there. Like, one of the persons we haven't even talked about yet is Kenny Omega. Omega had freaking great action in there. I mean, there was one point where he goes in, he snapdragon suplexes everybody and their mom in there. And that was really fun to see. So there were these really great moments. So I don't want to take away from that. And it's just a matter of, dude, there's just too many elements involved in a match like this.
10 guys, Denise, 10 guys.
Steven Marchuli says better Blood and Guts, better Blood and Guts or War Games. I did like War Games a lot more last year with the Bloodline and Sammy and just everything that they did there. I think War Games was definitely a lot better for me. Ooh, Reg, are we in disagreement here? I really enjoyed War Games last year.
What did they do? That same spot that they've done the same spot 50 times since that War Games match, the end, and whatever.
I know, but at the time, though,
this is an AEW post show. I'm trolling. I'm trolling you guys. You got to take that out of context and bury me.
Okay. Steven Marchuli asked a great question. All right. And if you're going to ask me, Denise, what did you like more? This Blood and Guts or the past War Games we just saw? I'm going to go with War Games.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's man. Fine. We're going to bring out the drama here.
I'm not trying to.
Grapple Geekery says, I was thrilled to see the Elite in Blood and Guts. The spots were fun. Too bad for the BCC at the end, though. Live by the bastard, die by the bastard.
That's what they get for trusting Pac. You can't trust Pac. He was going to do that from the beginning. Like, you knew that he was kind of on his own agenda, and he showed it at the end that he was all about him.
See, really. I didn't see that. I didn't see it that way. No, I didn't. I saw it more as, okay, if I'm going to go into a Blood and Guts match, I want the craziest mother effers on my side, on my team. And when I think of somebody that I would want on my team, you think of Pac, who is a crazy freaking bastard. And so I know that this is a guy that's going to go in there and do all it takes to inflict damage on these people that he doesn't like. Why? Because we know he doesn't like them. And so for me, it just didn't fall in line with Pac.
Yeah, I guess so. And if, like, we're kind of playing off the Eddie Kingston thing, he likes Pac. He's supposed to be like a big Pac supporter, so he probably would choose him. And Phil and Pac, you would think that, like, if I need somebody to go to war, yo, Pac's going to be the one. But he just kind of got caught up in everything, man. There was a lot going on. When the Bed of Nails comes out, I'm like, you know what, you guys? I'm going to watch the rest of this from the back, y'all. Y'all doing a lot out here. Moxley's bleeding from his ears, his head, his back, his neck. I'm like, I got to go.
At one point, I'm like, man, what the hell was John Moxley doing? Is he out there just rolling around in the freaking glass?
Like a snow angels in the glass while on top of the Bed of Nails. Like, dude, get him out of here. He's having way too much fun. But the shots of him at the end, though, kind of being like, man, I try to throw everything at these guys, and I'm just tired. We're great. This could be like a John Moxley's going to take a vacation, have a break, kind of re-examine everything. But this is John Moxley. He'll be back probably next week to get bloody again.
That's been the running joke, though, is that he's never gotten his vacation.
Right, right.
The man needs a vacation.
Right.
Reggie Simmons sends in a super chat saying, just showing support to the Kelly Connection. Much love to SoCal and NorCal. Thank you so much to Reggie Simmons. Metalhead for Life sends in a very generous super sticker. Thank you so much to Metalhead for Life. Sheldon Jackson sends in a super chat saying, I'm curious to know if Tony Khan will use the Pac walking out and beefing with Claudio in order to book Pac versus Claudio on Friday for Death Before Dishonor for the Ring of Honor World title. Makes sense to do the match after Blood and Guts tonight. And that was something that you had originally mentioned, Reg. Anything else you wanted to add to this?
No, you're just telling the story right there. We lost. Unfortunately, Mark Briscoe was supposed to be in the match with Claudio, but he's going to be out with the knee injury for an undetermined amount of time. If you want to have a match that you can book on a short notice, they told the story here. And even if you didn't tell the story here, Claudio versus Pac in a match for the Ring of Honor World Championship is a big match. So, yeah, I hope they do it.
Yeah. James Hammond sends in a super chat saying Elite and BCC shook hands after the match. Thank you so much for sending that in. So, I mean, this pretty much to me, right, would signify end of feud, done. We're going to move on to other things. So we shouldn't expect to be circling back to this, at least not with what we're seeing with these core members right now. So Shane Monster sends in a super chat saying Bon Jovi voice. Oh, I can't do a Bon Jovi voice. Damn. All right, I'm just going to read it normally. Bon Jovi voice. I want to lay you down in a bed of nails. Seriously, a bed of nail spots on TBS. Amazing. Ibushi shit-talking Mox after. Let's fucking go. I'm all here for Ibushi and Mox, as we mentioned earlier, because that portion of this Blood and Guts match was phenomenal to see.
And then remember, at one point, Denise Excalibur did an ad read for...
American Heart Association.
Yeah.
Or the Blood...
Blood Red Cross, maybe one of those.
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. Damn.
Look at me trying to cue it up and don't even remember what it was for. Like, they remember he did a thing that none of us could remember exactly what the thing was for.
I think because for me, I'm like, I just see red and I'm like, oh, okay, like they're doing an ad read for this. So it's like, oh, it's the American Heart Association. Oh, it's blood, whatever. But it's ironic though that they were still doing it and they were, you know, yeah, exactly. I kind of liked it. I was thinking to myself, damn, someone should just, because you know how they're always trying to collect blood, clearly, because you need to collect blood. I was like, it would be
about to say something wild.
It would be pretty hilarious if all of a sudden someone showed up with a little bucket and just stood next to John Moxley and followed him around with a little bucket trying to get the blood.
They're scraping blood off his back.
Sir, do not waste this blood. We need it.
Hey, he'd be a great spokesperson for blood donation. Like, this guy's always giving up blood. He doesn't care about getting poked.
I love that, though. That was pretty funny, even though we clearly already forgot what... God, we're so bad, Reg. We're so bad. Crazy. Christopher Marino says, I think I have seen way too many GCW death matches. I was expecting way more blood. The bed of nails was awesome, though. You know, here's the thing, though. And this is somebody who has seen a lot of GCW since I've done a lot of ring announcing for them.
Personal, yeah.
I've seen a lot of stuff, okay? Dude, I was there when Alex Zane got the freaking glass in his eye.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay? Yeah. I've seen some shit go down at GCW. But that being said, you can't compare the two.
No.
Because AEW is on television doing this stuff. We can't be seeing the exact same things that we're seeing, you know, happen on GCW, on Fight TV. It's just two totally different things. There was even some things where in the past and even in this match where I'm like, damn, I wonder, you know, how AEW got away with being able to do this and being able to show this much. And, you know, this has been a hot topic. Let's not forget the freaking the Dominoes thing a while back.
Yeah, exactly. When Jon Moxley brought out the bed of nails, I was thinking, like, I wonder what these advertisers are thinking, like, This is one of our good shows. They do great numbers on Wednesday night. They're high. But they're just watching, and then Moxley just brings out a bed of nails to slam his opponent on. His head's all bloody. There's blood everywhere. There's glass. It's probably like, this is a wild show. But I think that's really cool. Yeah, you can't really compare it to GCW because they do wild stuff. They do some of the craziest death matches of all time. And this is a television show, man. Like, somebody could stumble past this. I mean, we don't want kids to be watching this, but they could stumble past this, and you don't want to see too much blood, even though it's not crazy. It's just a TV show. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? I get you.
All right. So yeah, you can't compare the two. Redmond Survivor says, great touch with Moxley surrendering to save Yuta from being choked with the chain, as that's how Mox lost to Hangman before. He knows how it feels. We got Ernie good Phoenix 23 who says, yeah, sorry, but I thought the finish was good. That's what we want. We want your hot takes. We want your opinions, even if they differ from ours. Ernie, thank you so much for sending this in. Johnny says, do you want to see the BCC versus the Death Triangle?
Yeah, totally. I want to see Pac in all the feeds from this one. I want to see him in a match with every single person that was in this thing one-on-one, just because he's amazing. What's Ibushi gonna do? What's Moxley gonna do coming out of this? Really interested to see the whole stories, because there's still some single match stories that they could tell. There's still Kenny and Takeshita that needs to be paid off. Ibushi and Pac gotta go at it one time. Pac and you know, there's like all these stories that they could still tell. I don't think they're gonna be telling the big BCC versus Elite 5-on-5, 3-on-3 match, but they're still gonna tell it. But yeah, BCC next feud could definitely be for going for the Trios Championships, But the Trios Championships are tied up right now. They got a big match coming up this weekend with the Acclaim, who might be the new Trios champion. So I don't know.
Man, anything to get the Acclaim back on top, man. Jake Salazar sends in a super chat saying Dominic is the worst wrestler alive.
Alive?
I don't know. Jake Salazar also says, I know Reg was dancing in his room during the dance-off. Come on, Reg. We know it's true. You got a little ring camera watching you.
Not TikTok dancing in my room. I can't confirm or deny.
Have you seen that TikTok trend where people are like, I don't get it. I've only seen a little piece of it, but where they send like these little gifts and then they do all these like,
popcorn. Yes. It's weird. It's super weird.
Can you imagine the wrestling version of that? If someone right now, if you could send little graphics, all of a sudden people are sending, I don't know, a slap, bam, gotta slap yourself, a chop, gotta chop yourself.
Woo!
Woo! Scissor me, like little scissors for the scissor. Can you imagine? We'd be like,
too weird. Sorry, that sound like a bop it right there. Bop it.
Twist I would it. Do that.
Turn it. Ah!
Hey, if people are paying for that, like, think about it. Denise, you just got to sit there and do little things like this.
You better get in the game, Denise. There's money on the table.
Yes, boy. Sends in a super chat saying, what are some of your guys' favorite crowd chants? I still laugh hearing you sold out or you sick fuck. Minus you, you fucked up.
You fucked up is like a classic one. That's ECW. Level thing, but of course my favorite chant is the chant that I made up. Both these guys, if you need the story, definitely look it up. I made it up one day at PWG, so anytime that I hear both these guys, it's forever my favorite chant.
Wait, that was you?
I invented both these guys. Yeah, I posted a Twitter clip of
it. I didn't know that.
Yeah, one day we were at PWG. It was Cedric Alexander against Trevor Lee. They're both in WWE now. They're having a match and the match starts and I said, I don't know. I like both these guys. And then right after that, we all started both these guys. That was first. You can't trace that back to anybody in the world before that day that happened in PWG. The reason that both these guys is a chant is because of me.
Wow, Reg. Why didn't you make a shirt of it or anything like market it? I would be like, I'm a both these guys guy.
I am the both these guys guy.
There
both
you go. Guys.
And that chant has been at like WrestleMania. I'm like, dude, this all started in Reseda, California, baby boy. PWG, if it wasn't for PWG, Denise, I say it all the time, there wouldn't be any of this. It's the beginning of everything.
Exactly.
Shout out to PWG. They're having a show too. They just announced another show for the 20th anniversary in August, which is dope.
Man, gotta love PWG. Mm-hmm. Roberto Arsenal sends in a super chat saying the dance off made me spit my beer from laughter. There was some good stuff in there. Also, thank you so much to Alan Taylor for this very generous super chat. We appreciate you a whole lot. Tony cool. Campbell says Tony Khan missed the mark tonight. No Mercedes Moné in Boston. Guys, she's still injured.
Yeah,
he's still injured.
I think there was a bunch of things that we would have been seeing throughout the summer if it wasn't for this injury that just set back so much.
Yeah, it probably did. Jake Salazar sends in a super chat saying Denise War Games was mid as duck. Like, come on now, stop trolling us. Most of us WWE wrestling is mid. See,
Jake doesn't like WWE. Here's the thing.
Had you just left it at stop trolling us, I would have thought, you know what? That's his opinion. He thought it was mid, right? Okay, fine. You're allowed that opinion. But then you put most of WWE wrestling
is Jake. Mid. He's gonna keep going.
And then I'm thinking, okay, now I get the agenda here. I get it, Jake. Jason PS3 says, CBCC, you would have picked Timothy Thatcher instead of Pac. You guys would have won. Thank you so much to Jason.
It should have been Eddie Kingston. That's the reason I hope that's the story that they tell, is that Moxley is like, you went off to do the G1 and I needed your help in this match where shit is crazy and shit gets bloody, and instead you were over there living out your little Japanese fantasy. And then Eddie Kingston responds back with, Claudio was still in this match, I would have turned on him and beat him up anyways. But yeah, there's a lot they could tell with that, because I think that's the reason they could be like, we lost this match because you didn't have my back, bro. And they could continue to tell that Moxley and Eddie Kingston story. So
all right, and then we got some more thoughts in here. This one's from Mike290K, who says, hey, Denise, comparing a PG War Games match to a TV-14 Blood and Guts match is crazy of to me. I hope Warner Brothers loved the match. I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. And I do agree. I feel like you can't compare, but if you were to, like the person asked, what did you like more? I did like War Games more.
Yeah.
I knew that was going to cause drama. Anything, like you could be like, man, you could have, I don't know, the AEW talent bake a cake and the WWE talent bake a cake. And I'm like, you know what? That fucking AEW cake was really fucking good. All of a sudden, it's like, how freaking dare you not like the WWE cake and vice versa.
And weren't you just on a WWE red carpet last night,
Denise? Oh, man, the timing of it all.
And now you're doing an AEW. She is just playing all sides, you guys. Do you guys see this? You guys see what's going on? She had some WWE cake last night. Today, she's having AEW cake. She's eating all the cake.
I was going to say, I did have some pretty great food last night, though. See? I had some good stuff there. I was some
Cody Rose cake.
I had some really great tater tots. Don't ask, but those tater tots were incredible. I was eating them and I was like, oh.
You would love the tater tots.
I do love the tater tots, man. But yeah, I had some tater tots. I had some I don't know what they're called, but you know those little brown things where you put the little weenie inside?
Pigs in a blanket.
No, they're not pigs in a blanket. I thought they were pigs in a blanket, and I told SRS, I'm like, oh look, pigs in a blanket. And he's like, no, those aren't pigs in a blanket. And then I was like, oh, okay, well.
The brown things where you put the little thing inside.
Yeah, it's just like, it's basically like a bread-covered weenie thingy. I don't know, but I ate it. It was good. I had that. I had, what else did I have? I had some pizza, and I didn't have the chicken. There was chicken, but I didn't have it. And there was some other stuff that I forgot about. But the tater tots were on point. All right, and let's press on from here. And this is from Johnny, who says, I heard Ezra Miller agree to wrestle Nick Gage. What? What's happening? Taylor Cannon says, what's up, Denise and Reg? That Blood and Guts match was crazy. Thank you so much to Taylor Cannon. Yes Boy says, what did y'all think of Garcia and MJF's thrust battle? We'll get to that in just a second. And then Mighty90K says, I actually invented the chant, both these guys at a club in 2015 when I told the bouncers to kick both these guys out of a club. We all chanted it as they left.
It was in 2014 for me, Mike. So, on your face, bro.
Damn, drama. All right, Mike T90K, thank you so much for this generous super Appreciate chat. That, all right. Oh, man. And let me see. People are saying it is pigs in a blanket. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm like, that's what pigs in a blanket is.
I thought they were. I literally told Sean, I'm like, dude, I'm like, look, these are.
What's this brown stuff that you're talking about on the outside?
Man, I just didn't get any pictures of it. It's just like brown, like bread, like almost like, you know, the corn, mini corn dogs. I think that's what they were. Mini corn dogs.
How did you get?
That's had to be because, you know, the exact bread that the corn dog has.
Why can't you just say mini corn dogs? How did we not start there? Oh, that's what it is. Mini corn dogs. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know mini corn dogs were a thing like until yesterday. Ooh, all right. Someone says, was it a kolache? I don't even know what a kolache is.
I've never seen that word in my life.
Yeah, I'm so sorry, Magnum Way. I feel bad that you wasted your super chat. We don't even know what kolache is.
I don't know what that is.
Or kolache. No idea, man. Mm. All right, so they were mini corn dogs is what they were. Ooh. All right, I had a mini corn dog. It was fine. All right, let's continue on. We'll circle back if anybody else wants to talk. We pretty much covered a lot of Blood and Guts already, but
we went almost the same amount of time as Blood and Guts. We went talking about Blood and Guts.
Oh, shit. That was an accident. I hadn't even looked at the clock until now, so let's press on. We got the Blind Eliminator Tag Team Tournament Finals. AEW World Champion MJF and Adam Cole taking on Sammy Guevara and Daniel Garcia. Prior to this match, we got another bit with Adam Cole and MJF. They go eat spicy food because MJF doesn't like spicy food. And so Adam Cole tries to get him to eat spicy food. Right. He eats the spicy food. And granted, they want some water. But instead, unbeknownst to them, they end up getting alcohol. And so they're chugging it. And so then they get drunk. And they start thinking the waiter is Sammy Guevara and Daniel Garcia. And then it ends with them yelling double clothesline and whatever. Then afterwards, we get an interview where they're being interviewed by Renee. And MJF and Adam Cole both gift each other gifts. They give each other trunks and jackets. And then Adam Cole says, I have one more gift to you, but you'll have to find out later. That gift ended up being a mashup of their two theme songs together as they came out. We ended up having this match. And we did end up seeing Adam Cole and MJF get the win. But prior to that, there was a dance-off. And so I want to start there with the dance-off. when I saw this, I was thinking, oh man, I just know a lot of people are gonna shit on this.
How do you feel about it, Denise? Let's start with you.
In the beginning, I was like, oh, I get what they're trying to do. It's funny. I'll laugh, whatever. Mm-hmm. At first, I was indifferent to it. I didn't really care.
Yeah.
But there was one thing that happened in this dance off that killed me. It killed me, everybody. And it was Adam Cole going with this. I don't know what he was doing. What is in his
that?
Mouth.
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
And his arms. And I'm like, what yeah,
apparently
is that?
That's like a bit from his stream that he does on Twitch or something.
What?
Some kind of connection to the people. He's good at doing things like that.
I had no mm-hmm. idea. I've never seen his Twitch, but it mm-hmm. killed me. I was dying with that one freaking part. That one mm-hmm. part of Adam Cole dancing like that made this entire thing worth it to me.
Yeah, when it was happening, I was like, I don't know what's happening. Like, as it was going down, I'm like, okay, they already did the bit with the video and them in the Chinese restaurant. Like, that's a cool thing. They're eating spicy food. Now they're dancing. So as it's happening, I'm like, I don't know. They're really trying to sports entertainment it up. But, you know, as soon as Daniel Garcia starts hitting this thing, you're like, all right, this is pretty good. Like, this is a silly way to even put more onto Daniel Garcia and his dance. Sammy Guevara should have stayed out of this, though. He was God awful at dancing. He could not put two and two together. His feet couldn't match his arms. He didn't know what. It looked like he was dancing in quicksand at one point. I was like, he is having a hard time.
I didn't notice that.
You got to go back and look at him.
I think I was mainly paying attention to Daniel Garcia, or maybe I was just seeing them both. That like I didn't mm-hmm. zoom in or focus in on.
Yeah,
them
no, he was dancing. Like his arm, like you're supposed to go like at the same, and he just like
he's supposed to be the Spanish God, man.
Yeah, nope, the Spanish was not in there. He could not get it together. Good thing he could flip because that rhythm was not out there. I tell
you. Oh man. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that part. Mm-hmm. But it was funny afterwards when he did his pose and then Daniel Garcia just pops in between it. He just pops in.
Very entertaining way to, that. Right. Very entertaining way to, you know, start, you know, before the match. Because the match got pretty hot. And I think the crowd being really into it was an added element. Because if they would have started doing that, Denise, and the crowd started booing, it could have went way different.
Yeah, it did. It could have been disastrous. But you know what? It worked out. People love MJF and Adam Cole together.
They do.
We mentioned, you know, the match was very fun. The crowd was very into it. I love the part mm-hmm. where Adam Cole basically convinced MJF to do the dive and everybody was like acting all crazy. And there was a really funny shot of MJF just like, I did it, you know, like this big moment. Yeah, so there was a lot of fun in there. But so they win the match. And afterwards, we end up kind of getting another tease of this whole coexist portion of it. Yeah. I'm thinking, oh, no, don't do this. We know it's going to happen eventually, but
right.
I'm not ready yet. But what we ended up getting is when they're celebrating, there's a moment where MJF's looking off at the crowd and Adam Cole ends up getting his title. MJF's mm-hmm. world title, and he has a little bit too much of, you know, eye contact with it. He's holding on to it. He's looking at it. And MJF notices this, he gets pissed off, he shoves them, they kind of get in each other's face, but then they come together and they hug, and then Adam Cole goes off and he starts, you know, doing his bit on the top rope and cheering and all of this, but there's a shot of MJF looking at him, very, very suspicious, and so it makes you wonder when they head into this match with FTR, because FTR did go out there and they did have a little bit of a face-to-face, so this match is going to be happening, and it makes you wonder if this is where the moment's going to happen where they can't coexist.
It seemed like a little too early, maybe like immediately after them winning the tournament, of them getting right into the can we coexist thing. Because I think they laid a pretty good foundation these last couple of weeks of like, we all know it's coming, Denise. Like, we know what's going to happen here. One of these guys is going to turn on the other. Like, we can all see it coming. But trying to get into it so quickly could be not the greatest thing, but I think the execution and the landing is going to be great anyways. And them just getting people into where they are now with wanting to get behind them and wanting them to actually win the AEW World Tag Team Champions, I think is an accomplishment enough. So I'm interested to see how they kind of finish this off.
Would you want them to win the tag team titles?
No, I don't think so. Just because I think the story with them. The story is getting to them in the world title match against each other. And I don't think we should sacrifice the tag team championships in order to get there. I think we could tell the story with them losing the match.
Yeah, I would be upset of myself if I said that I think that they should win, especially given that we just came off this incredible match that FTR had with Bullet Club Gold on Collision. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, like, let's just say that if FTR were to lose the titles to MJF and Adam Cole, I feel like you would have way too much going on. You'd be sacrificing way too much for this one particular story.
Exactly.
Where you don't need all of that. You already have the world championship belt.
You're already telling the stories and kind of take that away from what FTR is doing. And to it would be on the back burner because they're going to immediately start telling the story with the world title. And that's just not good to do to the tag team championship.
No, it would be a disgrace, I think, to do that to the titles.
Especially considering FTR don't even defend them that much already. And we don't need to get them on a less defended thing.
Right. And I think they need to keep that story. If anyone's going to take the titles off of FTR right now, it's got to be Bullet Club Gold. And so I feel like, which in a way, now that I think about it, it's kind of, you know, I do like the idea of like, hey, maybe there's this options. Yeah. But at the same time, it's almost a dead giveaway that it's not going to happen.
Right. I mean, but you never really know these days.
True.
Because
hard
they
change.
You know what I mean? Like MJF being involved and how quickly things change and they could change it back next week. Like you just never know.
How did you feel about Dax, by the way, going into the camera and being like, Tony, next time you play my song, because we're the champs.
Spicy talk, Denise. Spicy talk. That seemed a little bit personal in the camera there.
Right?
It did seem a little bit personal.
That I wasn't so sure if that was like planned or not. I was looking at that and I was going, okay, that's interesting.
And you know how Dax get down, Denise. He don't hold his tongue ever. Like if he's going to say something, he's going to say it immediately. He knew to look right in the camera and say, look me in the eyes. We are the champions. I mean, if,
and
you
then
know,
specifically mentioned Tony. And it's rare when I guess it's not rare anymore when they mention Tony, but it's still not like people are mentioning him.
Yeah, it's different.
Promo or anything like that.
Right. And knowing kind of how the story of how FTR is and how, like, even as a character, like, you know, this would kind of bother him as a character, but like knowing who Dax is, you know that, like, that was real. Like, he's really probably mad that they didn't play his music to go out of there.
Going like, I wonder what's going on there. Like, I don't know. I thought twice about that one, but it was still pretty, it was interesting. All right. So let's see what we got here. We got a couple more super chats here. And let's see. I think the last one that I left off in was, all right, we read Taylor's Cannons. We read Yes Boys. Okay, we read Mike 290. Sorry, guys. Magnum Weight also. Okay,
no, we read
that
one. That was
okay.
The last
Jake
one.
Salazar says, Denise, I don't like or watch WWE and all, and it's all management's fault. The company blows like Lana Rhodes blow again. Hey. Management's fault, says Jake Salazar. Well, Jake, you're allowed to watch whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Grapple Geekery says, Adam Cole, you've got lust in your eyes and in your black heart for Triple B. You know what I was thinking of when Adam Cole was like lovingly looking at the Triple B?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of Bruce Springsteen's Jesse's Girl.
You know that Jesse's Girl.
You can apply it to this. It can very much be applied, except that instead of Jesse's Girl, it's MJF's Triple B.
Hey, this is it. I mean, you know, Adam Cole. See, the story that you told has been stuck in my head, Denise, ever since you said Adam Cole might be the one. We're all thinking MJF's going to be the one that turns.
No.
But Adam Cole, from the beginning, has kind of been doing a little conniving. He's over here with his partner, with his buddy Roderick Strong, being like, no, I got him. He could be trying to trick everybody and be like, no, we're friends, we're good. But in the end, he really wants that world championship.
It's definitely going to be Adam Cole. It's in my gut, man. I feel it. LaRon Ford says, we got the 1 90-second women's match that felt like it was there just to check the box. The AEW women's division deserves so much more
Denise,
better than this.
Talk about
LaRon
it.
LaRon Ford, might as well. We'll get to it. We had a quick match between Britt Baker and Kayla Sparks, which, by the way, I do want to shout out Kayla Sparks because if you guys have ever known or seen or met Kayla Sparks, that girl is a pocket full of sunshine. That's all I know how to describe Kayla Sparks. She's always happy. She's wrestled for both WWE and AEW in these types of matches. She's all over the indie scenes trying to make a name for herself. So I was very happy to see Kayla Sparks in this match against Britt Baker. This was very quick. Britt Baker hits her neck breaker, lockjaw for the win. Match is over.
This tells me, okay, if you like pizza, say you really like pizza, would you rather have really bad pizza or no pizza at all? This is kind of what it feels like to me. Would you rather have a 90-second match where they're just a squash, or would you rather have no pizza at all? And you tell me you give me the real pizza another time. Like, don't just be like, oh, we got 2 minutes to fill. Let's do a women's match so they don't yell at us. That feels even worse to me, doesn't it? Doesn't it feel like a little bit more personal? They're like, we'll give you this match, but it's really going to be like, if you go to the bathroom, you're going to miss it. It's crazy.
Yes, that's true. Because even when, and I feel really bad saying this, because even when I was reading LaRon Ford's message, the super chat, I'm sitting here going, oh yeah, that match did happen. Inside my head, his super chat was a reminder. If you were going to tell me, Denise, review the show in 30 seconds, I would have told you everything that happened, Blood and Guts, everything that happened with Jericho, everything that happened with everything else, Jungle Boy, Hook, you name it. I would have never mentioned this match because I had completely forgotten about it.
And it did, like, what purpose did it serve? Even beyond that, like, even if we did talk about it, like, for Britt, but what?
I'm wondering, I'm like, are they trying to just, you know, get Britt back up there? Not Brick, Britt back up there in terms of, okay, let's go have her go out there and get some wins. But it's like, how much do the wins really, really matter when they're like this?
Exactly. It's like, this isn't something to remember. It's just going to get people upset like this. Like, okay, you're presenting it to us, cool. But then, like, some people already feel a way about Britt. We talked about it before on the show. And it's so like,
twice already, people keep bringing up Britt.
I'm saying
all the time.
And so, and like,
the same thing
for them to, like, okay, here's Britt, and then only give them up for this amount of time. It looks kind of crazy. You know what I mean? Like, just give it to me on Collision. Give me Britt and somebody on Collision and let them go 15 minutes. Don't give me this 90 seconds just so you could be like filling the ladies' quota. It feels like,
for example, like, even Chris Statlander, she's your TBS champion.
She was there. They showed a promo with her on the show.
But they could have done something else with her.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
They could have done something with her. I almost feel like the issue right now, and we've said this so many times, but it almost feels like they don't have the person to center the women's division around.
Right.
Like, the one person that can start connecting all of these different things and start bringing together the women's division. I really do think that's missing. And I almost feel like that's part of the reason why AEW isn't putting much more effort into their women's division.
And it's like the one person that they have to put on the show. They don't have that person where it's like, we have to put her on the show today.
Exactly. And we mentioned this before. Like I said, like, I don't know who the Becky Lynch of AEW is. I do not know who your Charlotte Flair of AEW is, or your Bianca Belair, or whatever, right? And we've said
saying
that
it's not Britt, also, is what you're saying right here.
Not right now. They had a chance.
Your face.
Oh, what's wrong with my face?
No, it's just like you made like a, I don't know. It was for a minute. We could have said this a couple years ago, right? When the crowds are crazy for her. Every time they go to Pittsburgh, it's crazy. But at this moment right here, I don't feel like I don't feel like today was like, we have to see Britt Baker. Like, even for this 90 seconds, it's crazy. Like, there's been times where they've had women on their show for a short amount of time, and they utilize that 3 minutes or 5 minutes better than kind of what was happening here.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I almost feel like Jamie Hayter being out right now is hurting the division a lot more than maybe a lot of people might have assumed or predicted, because she's really the last person that I can think of that people really just got so behind.
Yep.
And I'm not feeling that right now for anybody else. I'm not seeing the crowd go crazy if, you know, you just mention You remember when people, you just mentioned Jamie Hayter and everybody was like,
yeah, just saying her name would get people to go crazy. And there's not any energy like that right now.
No, there's not. And that's very unfortunate. And it sucks because, you know, I feel like there was a while where AEW got a lot of criticism over their women's division and you can tell it bugged them. So they started kind of looking like they were making changes. Right. Mm-hmm. And we got some changes. We got to see a little bit more. We got some really great stories. And then it just faded away.
Yeah, it's kind of, it hasn't been great. I thought that Toni Storm's run for a long time was great. Remember when she was the AEW champion? She was on TV for like weeks, like 12, 13 weeks in a row, back to back to back, having these high profile matches, putting her championship on the line. I thought that's when they probably was, for me, my favorite time as the AEW women's champion. A lot of people say they like she is Rio's time or different times, but what Toni Storm was doing when she was just back to back, showing that she's one, an incredible wrestler, and that the AEW women are different. I thought she was establishing something different, but then that just kind of all petered off. I thought they were going to do the same thing with Jamie Hayter, but then they started telling this outcast story, and the outcast story kind of shadowed over everything. And where we're at with it now doesn't feel like a good place, you know?
No, I'm even trying to think right now. This is really embarrassing, but what's the other top story except for the women besides the outcast? What's like the other hot feud going on right now with the women that you're like, oh yeah, this feud with so-and-so and so-and-so? I can't even think of one right now.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't think there is one. This is it, right?
I watch the product on a weekly basis. Seriously, all their shows,
and I'm like, nothing.
Oh man, that sucks. It really sucks, but hopefully they get it. They figure it out. Hopefully we get whatever the missing ingredients are, I hope they manage to get it. And
right.
Man. All right. Because here's the thing. I do want to say one more thing about this, because whenever we do get something really great with the women, dude, people eat it up.
That's
people love it. People want it. People want to see it. And I cannot tell you how many times I've been on these post shows where something magnificent happened with the women, where they had a really great match and everybody's on here like, oh my God. And so, yeah, you know, I know that if they do go out there and they do have that, people want to talk about it and people are interested.
And you just see how it is consistently online after every AEW show. It's always the same thing. We want more women wrestling. We want more of this. This isn't enough. Why is there only one segment when they have all these shows? So the people want it. And yeah, exactly like you said, when there's a great women's wrestling moment, everybody's excited about it. We want more. We crave it. Like, everybody just wants these moments. And it's apparent when it doesn't, when they don't get enough, they're vocal about it. It's like every time they're like, why was there only this? There's numbers. People are adding up segments and all this. So I think it's something that people want. Thank God we can't continuously every single week talk about this. They have to do something about it.
No, I can't come up just copy and paste everything we said today next week, so that I'm just gonna clip this part out, and the next time we get this question, I'm like, here,
on all of our, anytime we talk about AEW though, Denise, it's not just this show on Grapsity, we talk about it. Like, anytime that AEW comes up, people are like, well, what about the women's division? They gotta do something.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so I'm trying to remember what was the last show that I was at. It wasn't Forbidden Door. What did I go to before that?
Double or Nothing.
No, it wasn't Double or Nothing either. What fucking show was I at? I went to a show, an AEW show, and I'm blanking right now on what it was that I was there for, what I was doing. It wasn't Forbidden Door. It might have been, was it Collision? I forgot what I was there for, whatever. But sometimes you overhear people's conversations, and sometimes I like to hear people's conversations, right, when I'm just sitting there, and I like to hear what people say, because there's different types of fans. And there was a guy and a girl behind me at the show, and from the sounds of it, the guy was, you know, more of a fan than the girl was. The girl was just kind of there. It seemed like she kind of went as a buddy thing, and they were having conversations. And one of the things that I recall the guy telling this girl was, oh yeah, their women's division, they don't really care about it, so they don't actually really do anything with it, which really sucks. And I remember hearing him telling her this, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, like, we got a male viewer right now is a big fan and obviously wants to see something with the women, telling his female friend, there is nothing for you on this show.
That's crazy.
And I was just sitting there kind of like listening, being a little bit of a chismosa, but and I was just thinking, like, damn, like that kind of sucks. Like, you don't think about it, but there are, You know, you think that everybody who's going to the shows that are fans, no, some people just go with friends that are casuals because, you know, they just need someone to go with the show. And I knew that she was a casual because he was explaining and telling her about all of these people throughout the entire show. So anyways, man, Laron, you really got your super chats worth right there. Magnum Wade says kolaches are essentially a yeast bun with a filling, usually sausage. It's based on Czech food and pretty popular here in Texas. Try boudin once. Okay, thank you so much, Magnum Wade.
Sounds good.
Learn something new every day. Steven says MJF doing the Cody Rhodes angry power walk made me LOL. Yes, definitely. Boy. Yes, boy says, are we watching Barbie this weekend? I don't know if I'm watching it this weekend, but I do want to watch Barbie. Reg, you watching looks Barbie?
Funny. I saw the trailer earlier on TV and I was like, that looks funny. And people have been talking about it. People have shown clips. I'm like, I don't know. I wouldn't go to theaters and watch it because I don't go to the movie theaters, but I would watch it if it was on.
Okay. Jake Salazar says, like I said on Grapsity, if Punk is turning heel, you bet your whole house. FTR turning heel with him.
Oh, true. They are telling that story. They are starting to tell that story, maybe.
Jake also says you could have put Luke Perry's son on Rampage where he belongs. We'll talk about him in just a second. And Laron sends in another super chat saying, do you think they did a better job featuring the women that's do you think if they did a better job featuring the women that someone like Mercedes Moné would have signed there instead of New Japan Pro Wrestling? It's a great. Well, here's the thing. Mercedes has said this multiple times. It was her dream.
Yeah.
It was her dream to be with New Japan.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the like that was going to happen regardless of what happens at the AEW. Like, she was going to go and do this, live out these dreams, have these dream matches, and kind of tell a different story getting out of WWE. That was going to happen regardless if Tony Khan had all the money in the world. Like, she was going to New Japan. So I don't think it was either or. I think she's trying to be everywhere she is. Again, it's really just this injury thing that's plaguing this whole thing. A totally different story could have been being told if she didn't hurt her ankle against Willow in Long Beach.
Well, here's the thing, Reg, if you're Mercedes Moné and you have an opportunity right now, let's just forget that the injury, let's say the injury was not a situation right now. You had the chance to sign with AEW. How would you see it? Would you see it as like, oh, well, they're not going to do anything with the women, so maybe I'm just going to go there and waste my time? Or do you see it as an opportunity to change the direction of the women's division?
Yeah, that's why I'm saying this, because this is Mercedes Moné. If she came in, then that person that we're talking about, the one that we're like, who's the one woman that's the face of this brand? That's the face of the brand. Like, immediately, she's the number one woman on the roster. Immediately, she's everything about this roster. You start building it off of that. So I think, like, her presence is what is needed over here, is why I think eventually she's going to be in AEW. It's really just a stupid injury.
Right, exactly. So I do see it the exact same way in terms of if you were to have Mercedes Moné, I can see it being a game changer for the division. Her being, like you mentioned, the face of the division. And it's
like
so
she would have had a match on this show tonight. Like if she there in the garden, a part of,
because
like,
you would
know
be
what I mean?
Pissed if you were a fan, if you knew she was on the show, you knew she was on the roster and you didn't get to see Mercedes, I would be pissed. I'd be like, oh, I want to see Mercedes. What the hell? You know?
Like, so they would have started the show with a big Mercedes match for sure.
Exactly. So I do think that somebody like a Mercedes Moné would be needed in AEW, and then that would help the entire division, and then, you know, build more people to if all of a sudden you don't got a Mercedes Moné anymore. Well, it's okay because we got Britt Baker. We got whoever else. Okay. Yeah. So let's go ahead and press on from here. We kind of went off on a tangent with all of the women's stuff, but let's talk about a match that we got for the FTW Championship, and this was Hook versus Jungle Boy. And before this match actually started, there was a video shown where Jungle Boy this is going to be so complicated.
It's going to be hard.
Jack Perry buries Jungle Boy. I'm so used to freaking calling him Jungle Boy. It's going to be the death of me right now. Mm-hmm. All right. So Jack Perry kills off Jungle Boy. Yes. And he comes out. It's got the brand new theme song. And I know it's a very famous song. Mm-hmm. Do you know the name of it, though?
Beethoven's...
Is that the one? Okay. Is that the one?
Like that. Yeah, yeah.
You hear it in all the movies, a million commercials.
Like, you've definitely heard this song before. It wasn't like a big, what song is that? It's like, you've seen it in cartoons. Like I said on Twitter that it was a Bugs Bunny song.
It is the fifth.
Yeah. I said on Twitter that it was a Bugs Bunny song because I remember hearing this like on a Bugs Bunny cartoon back in the day. Like, this is one of those songs.
I've heard it in so many places that I just like, everybody knows the song, right? Mm-hmm. But I was like, I don't know. I know it's some famous orchestra song. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's the new song. How are we feeling him coming out to Beethoven's Fifth?
I don't know.
Like a jerk, right?
Yeah, I guess
who
like
comes out to that kind of music.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of a pretentious theme song. Like you feel like, oh, what are you coming out to this song for, Jack? Like it does add a little extra element. He has the leather pants on now. He's got his facial hair done up. He's got his slick back ponytail. So it does kind of add. I was thinking that maybe he should. I think in order to go from the song that he had, it was a popular song, a big part of his presentation, to go to something that's going to eventually be something that we all hate, like Don Callis's theme, I think it's a perfect way to go.
Oh man. So he ends up getting this match. It was, I really loved the energy of this match.
Yeah, totally.
Dude, I loved what they did here. So it started off pretty hot with Hook going right after Jack Perry and getting him with all of these body shots. The crowd got into it right from the beginning. We see Hook hit a T-bone suplex to Jack Perry off of the apron, which was a pretty great moment. We see Jungle Boy hit him with a DDT. At one point, you think Hook is going to get counted out, but he doesn't. You go in there, you see... Hook hit a bunch of German suplexes on Jungle Boy at one point, and then he goes for the pin and ends up being a near fall. That was a really big moment there. There was a moment where Jack Perry, when the referee wasn't looking, he kicks Hook right in the balls, and you think it's over here afterwards. Like, he hits him with the elbow strike following that, and then it ends up being another near fall. I really thought the match was over at this point. But afterwards, we end up getting a ref spot. We end up getting a Hook seat. Hook gets a visual pin on Jungle Boy. God damn it, Jack Perry. And then Jack Perry cheats. He uses the FTW title. Yep. Hits Hook in the face. And that's how he's able to actually win this match and become the new FTW
the
champion. The
pin with the little smirk that Jack had on his face as he's pinning him.
I love this.
Beautiful. Yeah, I thought that Jack was the... for these last couple of weeks, we've been seeing him running. We've been seeing him just kind of dodging him. Thought he's going to be this like swarmy little heel, but the today that he was tonight with the presentation, how he presented himself and how he was working as a heel, that little smirk at the end, I thought was great. This is probably the best that I've seen him so far as a heel. And on the other side of this, I thought Hook looked great. Like he really took in the moment. The crowd was behind him. He really felt like, I mean, cause we haven't seen a lot of Hook matches recently or at all. And I thought he really looked like he's coming to his own. Like, this is like the perfect thing for both of them. Jack coming into his first really big heel thing and Hook trying to get something else to latch onto. I thought this was great from both of them.
Yeah, I agree. And it's so different from what we got previously with the promo that everybody hated and everybody was trashy. Oh my God. He was getting so much shit for that. And then like this was totally different. So what do you do? Do you keep the talk? Do you keep the promos at a minimum? Or do you keep doing them to keep adding to his heat because they're so not great?
I just think you keep doing videos kind of like this, like just give him a controlled environment. We don't need to see him live in front of the crowd with the mic right now. Give him some more of these little backstage things, these vignettes, or he could just kind of act a little bit, show what he's going while he's continuously working on that. And then we hit him with the big in-ring promos when it's time.
Right. Stephen Marchulli sends in a super chat saying, while I agree Mercedes Moné does more for AEW, her biggest money matches remain in WWE.
Hard disagree. Who's in WWE that you want to see her wrestle?
She's already had the match against Bianca. She's already, you know, done so much with Charlotte. I mean, there's a lot of people she's already done so much with.
Like everybody she's already wrestled. Asuka, EO. Like, I don't. What's going on over there? Yeah, no. Biggest money matches, everything else. She hasn't even scratched the surface of what's going on.
Jake Salazar says, Luke Perry's son as a heel, very mid.
I liked it.
All right, I did too. I was a fan of this. I think this was the one thing that they finally got right with Jack Perry. Oh, this is going to kill me. Oh, all right. We got a couple more things to talk about. Actually, one more thing left. But before we do, just a heads up to everybody. So as Reg mentioned, yesterday I was at the premiere of American Nightmare Becoming Cody Rhodes. And I was able to get a lot of really cool interviews. And I've gotten so much great feedback from those. If you haven't yet, they're up here on the channel for you guys to check out. I spoke to Cody Rhodes, DDP, Brandi Rhodes, Kevin Patrick, Chelsea Green, Matt Cardona. And so I did all those interviews. They're so much fun. Check them out. I think you guys will really enjoy them. There was some really good stuff. And the Cody Rhodes interview in particular, a lot of people have been saying really great things about it, which has made me feel so much better. So please check it out. Give it some love. It would really mean a whole lot to me if I was able to get some good numbers on that interview. So check it out and check all those other ones as well. All right. So we got one more thing to talk about. It's very brief. It really is the Jericho Don Callis situation. So one of the things that we didn't mention earlier was after the Daniel Garcia, Sammy Guevara, MJF, Adam Cole match, there was a portion where Jericho got up because he had been part of the commentary for that match. And Sammy and Daniel kind of just walk right past him. And then earlier in the night, they had shown footage of Jericho and Don Callis having dinner and Jericho and Don Callis coming in to the arena together, arriving together. Anything else that we haven't already said about this that you want to add based off of what you saw this week?
Not really. Jericho, I thought it was going to kind of add on to what's happening in the Blood and Guts match, and it just kind of didn't. They're trying to tell this story with Jericho, but it's going to be hard for me to get into any kind of Jericho stories moving forward if they're not immediately getting to him. If they're going to continuously tell these stories week after week with Don Callis and slow walk the dog, not interested.
Did you see his tweet today about Kota Ibushi?
I did. Yeah, Jericho, stop, dude. Like, we don't want us. Like, I know that you still think that dream, you have all these dream matches, but you're the only one, dog. Wake up, as Ryback would say. We don't want to see that. Let these people interact with themselves. Let a bunch of dream matches for Kota Ibushi. But you're like 100th on the list at minimum.
I can't believe we just got a quote from Ryback on this podcast.
Feed me more, baby.
All right. That is pretty much it that we got here for AEW Dynamite. I hope that you guys enjoyed the show. Reg and I, thank you so much for being on here, for coming on each and every single week to check out the California Connection. If you did enjoy the show, tweet us. Let us know. We want to hear your thoughts. If there was something that we missed, please let us know or anything that you wanted us to touch on. Please mention it. We love to hear your guys' thoughts. And then I will be back here on Friday for a SmackDown post show. And then I will also be here this Saturday to talk about AEW Collision. Last week's AEW Collision did really good numbers here on the post show. Obviously, it was a special show, but I'll keep it going, man. I'll keep it going. Unless I have plans on a Saturday. I don't know how to explain this, Reg, but for me and my Collision shows, it's like if something really amazing comes up, I'm going to go do that. But if not, then I'll be here talking about Collision.
That makes sense. They should know that they're always busy, and she needs to her schedule needs to be kind of open on a Saturday night, because anything could come in the email of her needing to get out and get down and get on an airplane. But so there too for the day, she's not flying away.
That's true. That's definitely true. Jake Salazar says Jericho is washed. Like, wake up, dude. It's not feeding time for you anymore. Oh, this breaks my heart. This breaks my heart, guys. It really does.
Sorry.
Bums me out. But that is our show. I want to thank everybody here for tuning in. And again, I'll be here on Friday for SmackDown and then Saturday for Collision. Do not forget to check out those interviews. Reg, where can people find you, support you, all that good stuff?
You can find me every Saturday, podcast, Lindsay. Tomorrow I'll be on the Ring of Honor post show with Kate. And Ask Rhapsody is on Thursdays. Potentially going to be on the Ring of Honor Death Before Dishonor post show also, or I probably will at some point because I cover Ring of Honor on the Fightful Network. So that's the thing that's coming up. Every Wednesday I'm on with Mike for Indeed. You can find me on Twitter. You can hear my songs on Fight Forever. We lit.
Awesome. Alrighty. Thank you, everybody. We'll catch you guys next time. Bye, everyone.
Peace.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at, like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires. Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.